Cancer can take away all my physical abilities. It cannot touch my mind, it cannot touch my heart, and it cannot touch my soul. And those three things are going to carry on forever.
Hi, I'm Mick McDonald.
And I'm Samantha Delgado.
And we're the hosts of the V Foundation for Cancer Researchers Voices for Victory podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Each episode, you'll hear stories of how cancer has affected the lives of so many people and how the V Foundation for Cancer Research is fighting to achieve victory over cancer. We'll speak with folks who have been touched by cancer in some way or leading cutting-edge cancer research, and sometimes both.
In Jim's famous ESPY speech, he said there are three things in life that are most important to him: where you started, where you are, and where you're going to be. We want to find out what prompted our guests' dedication to beating cancer, what they're up to now to support it, and where they see cancer research going in the future.
Today, our guest is Dr. Jamie Spengler. Dr. Spengler of the Sidney Kimmel Comprehensive Cancer Center at Johns Hopkins received a V-Scholar grant from the V Foundation in 2018. Her lab is hard at work developing new therapeutics that will activate the immune system against cancer. Today, we talk with Dr. Spengler about the path that led her to the field of cancer research, why the research her team is working on is so exciting, and where she sees cancer research heading in the future.
And now, our conversation with Dr. Jamie Spengler.
And I always have to think about what's important in life is to think to me of three things: where you started, where you are, and where you're going to be. Those are the three things that I try and do every day.
And we are now joined on the Voices for Victory podcast by Dr. Jamie Spengler. Dr. Spengler, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to chat with us today. We're so happy to have you on.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much. And so we're just going to dive into the questions since we're so excited to have you on. The first question is, how did you decide that cancer research was something that you wanted to pursue in your career?
Yeah, so actually, it probably goes back a pretty long time. So, you know, I've always been interested in how I can apply quantitative measurements and engineering principles to biology and to the biological sciences, which is why I decided to pursue as a college major biomedical engineering. But within biomedical engineering, I was especially intrigued by really the amazing ability of cancer to evade all aspects of the human immune system and to evade the various treatments and therapeutics that have been effective in a variety of other diseases. And so it really, to me, it remained this very open question, this very vast question that I felt would take more than just, you know, sort of biological principles to be able to really address. I felt that really quantitative, mathematical, engineering, physics principles, everything really needed to be harnessed together, because it's a very multifactorial, very complex system, and it's going to take a multifactorial and complex solution to be able to overcome it. And so I really felt that in the area of cancer research, through my training and my experience, I felt that I could meaningfully contribute to this very pernicious disease. And I hoped that I could do so by applying my engineering skills and bioengineering skills specifically to cancer research.
See, I think that's so interesting. And I always wonder, folks who are, you know, so scientific and have that scientific part of their brain that clearly leads them to be able to do the amazing things that you and other researchers can do. I wondered, Dr. Spengler, if, you know, you knew kind of going into college, you're going to get in that scientific sort of, that was the road your career was going to take. How far back did you know science was the field you wanted? Were you the six-year-old going to the science fair who knew that was something they wanted to do? Was that something that came later? How did that sort of get started for you?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, you know, I definitely know people who sort of came out of the womb and, you know, that's exactly, you know, sort of where they wanted to be and what they wanted to do. In my case, it was always sort of a part of my life. My dad is actually a mathematics educator, and from as far back as I remember, he had these like math mystery warm-ups that he would give me pretty much from the time I could read. And I was always just really fascinated by the, you know, sort of logical mysteries and problem solving sort of techniques. And I really enjoyed doing that for as long as I can remember. I've also been always very fascinated. I always loved, you know, I was the person that, you know, everyone else would be reading, like, you know, the novels, the romance novels or the teen novels. And I was always reading the mystery books, you know, like that was always very, very much, you know, my cup of tea. And so I was very interested in all subjects, in language arts and, you know, science and math and social studies, you know, all of the different aspects. But when it came to sort of choosing how I wanted to focus my career, I was very interested in a field where, you know, sort of the mystery and, you know, uncovering the secrets of nature and of, you know, the way things worked seemed like it had to be an integral part of anything that I would do, because I really always just had that curiosity, that drive, and that excitement about the unknown.
So if you did not get into cancer research, what do you think you might have been doing now? Would you be writing a mystery novel?
You know, I tell people, because I was asked this recently, and I was caught a little bit off guard. The first time I got asked, I was kind of like, I don't really know, because like it's the only thing you know and that you experience. Yeah. But now I'm prepared because they asked me last time. I think that I would be doing some sort of I would be some sort of forensic scientist. I think you know, one of those like CSI Miami or, you know, those TV shows are. I think it would be really interesting to do like crime scene investigation, or be a detective, or, you know, some sort of investigative researcher. I've always been a total junkie for those novels and shows and those types of things. But again, just kind of having that, you know, puzzle to solve and being able to apply a range of different skills to sort of approach that has always intrigued me.
You want the answers to all the questions, no matter what the questions are. You want to find the answer.
Well, I don't care what the questions are.
Right. I mean, it's clear how that, you know, that kind of thought process has led you down the professional path that you chose. I wonder, too, has cancer affected you all in your personal life? I mean, obviously, you know, most people have someone they know that's either gone through it or had a loved one go through it. How has that kind of affected your personal life, if at all?
No, it definitely has. And so, you know, when I said, you know, broadly that I was interested in, you know, biomedical sciences, obviously, you know, in terms of making a meaningful contribution, cancer affects all of us in a variety of different ways. For me personally, my father was diagnosed with prostate cancer when I was in college. And I remember, you know, because I was doing and engaged in cancer research at the time, everyone's sort of looking to you, you know, for the answers and for advice and those types of things. And I would try to explain, like, my advice would be that you listen to the clinicians and the doctors, you know, the oncologists, the people that you're working with. I can tell you about, you know, sort of like basic antibody, you know, drug discovery research. But really, that sort of, for me, catalyzed this moment where I said, you know, even though obviously like they're getting help from people, you know, professionally who do that for a living and who are engaged in clinical practice and patient interactions, it's my obligation as well to be someone that can communicate with and can talk with and can make impacts on the lives directly of patients. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, that's why we're here. That's why we're doing this. That's why we're devoted to this. And I think it was during that period that I really learned a very important skill, which I think has been instrumental in sort of everything that's happened in my career, which was how to communicate what I'm doing at the very basic level, and to help people understand how that can impact maybe not exactly their treatment regimen or protocol, but how that can impact the understanding of the mechanisms underlying cancer and how that information can be used to develop cures either from my own laboratory or that will be inspired in other laboratories or in other people that I train. And again, I think that sort of having that personal experience with it really forced me to think more critically about you know, sort of why I was doing this and how I could have broader impacts, even though my research, you know, in of itself did not involve direct patient interaction. And since then, I've had the opportunity through V Foundation and through other foundations that I've gotten funding from and that I've interacted with to actually directly talk to patient advocates, to talk to patients, and to really begin to, you know, disseminate more of the basic and underlying research to the people for whom it's most important. And I think that's really just been transformative for me and for my career. One other thing, aspect of my father's situation that was not necessarily unique, but just somewhat surprising to me since I didn't have a lot of experience with, you know, people with cancer patients previously, was that in my dad's case, it had to do with the earliness of which their disease was detected. Obviously, as everyone knows, early detection is often the key to, you know, positive prognosis and to being able to overcome the devastating effects of disease. And in his case, his cancer had progressed significantly before it was detected. And part of the reason for that was that his PSA levels, you know, although they had been rising each year when he'd been having his annual physicals, it hadn't reached sort of a critical threshold above which someone would, you know, sort of red flag that and say that it was an issue. And because the trends, but not the trends, but only the absolute value were being evaluated by his doctor at the time, that sort of went under the radar. And I think that made him more aware and also allowed him to talk to his friends and colleagues and other people that he knew and to express to them that it's very important for patients in a lot of cases to be educated, informed, and in some cases to be advocates for themselves about, you know, various things for really, you know, all aspects, all cylinders to fire. We can't just, you know, sort of be passively looking at, you know, particular numbers and saying that's good, that's bad. It's really important that we understand what those numbers mean and that patterns behind those numbers that could potentially be important, you know, really be monitored. And I think it comes back to what we were talking about before in terms of being curious, right? In terms of wanting to know, wanting to solve these mysteries. And so sometimes just having the awareness to ask questions when you don't understand, to dig deeper and delve deeper is very critical to getting the treatment and the care that you need.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Not everything is black and white, and kind of having that curiosity is really important. Like you said, to kind of find out the reasons behind the numbers rather than just looking at the numbers and saying, well, that's good and that's bad. And I mean, I know Mick and I are so appreciative of all of the work that you do and put into, you know, trying to find these cures. And I know back in 2018, you actually received a V Scholar grant from the V Foundation. Why was that so important to your career, would you say?
Yeah, so a number of reasons. So one, as I mentioned before, I think was absolutely fantastic. They put on this V Foundation Summit each year where all of the awardees come together, but also come together with members of the foundation, with patient advocates, and get a really comprehensive experience not only with interacting with these different people, but also with training for, you know, career development, for communication skills. They have all sorts of workshops involved with like improv and, you know, really important techniques and skills that you maybe, you know, are not necessarily trained for when you're sort of jumping into a faculty position. And it's particularly focused on junior faculty, which is very important because, again, it's this huge transition in your career from always just, you know, sitting at the bench doing experiments to leading a research lab and all of the various things to training people to running a team, to managing, to writing grants, to, you know, pretty much everything that you have not been trained for, that you don't have experience with, that's going to require new skills. And so it was really critical for me at that very early stage in my career to be connected with people that could help me develop these important skills, and also with other scientists who I've continued to stay in touch with, and some of whom I'm even collaborating with, to do the research. Of course, the ongoing support, not just of, you know, the summit and of the connections that I have through the V Foundation, but also of the program itself, has helped me to recruit a phenomenal postdoc to my laboratory, who's done tremendous work in moving forward this immunotherapeutic approach that my lab has been pursuing since we got started a couple of years back.
You mentioned the work your lab is going on, and I think we'd love to dive into that a little bit with you. Can you kind of give a quick overview to our listeners of what it is specifically that your lab's working on now?
Absolutely. So we're very interested in two different types of therapies, specifically targeting the immune system to sort of wake it up and activate the immune cells to kill cancer. And one approach that people have taken is what are called cytokines, which are basically these soluble proteins that float around in your body and communicate information from the outside of the cell inside of the cell and activate that cell to do important things. And in the case of the cytokine that we're targeting, this activates cells to have immunostimulatory responses, meaning that it will stimulate immune cells to kill cancer or to kill other invading pathogens. And the second type of therapy my lab has a very strong interest in is what are called antibodies. And antibodies are targeted proteins that are endogenous to your own body's immune system that in a variety of different ways neutralize any sort of invading pathogens or particular cellular targets, for example, cancer. And both of these different aspects of the immune response have been used therapeutically by either administering them directly or engineering them in some way and then administering them independently. But what my lab is very excited about is actually merging these together into a single therapy. So actually, my lab has a lot of expertise with various aspects of engineering proteins. And so we are fusing together these two different powerful proteins to create sort of a double threat and a molecule that could very robustly and in a very targeted and safe way be able to stimulate the immune response against cancer.
That's awesome. And why would you say that those two aspects of therapy are what you chose to focus on when you were first starting out with your research?
Yeah. So I had a lot of experience from my graduate work actually with antibodies. And that actually dovetailed very well with my postdoctoral work, which was mainly focused on cytokine engineering. And so it seemed like sort of a perfect pairing of my skills, both in biochemistry, biophysics, but also in structural design and in molecular evolution and various molecular engineering approaches to kind of combine those two different skill sets together.
So what would you say are, and maybe you're already getting there quicker than you thought, but what are the long-term goals from this research? It sounds like the hope is that this these therapies that you're sort of combining would become more common and maybe something that are used more often. Where do you see, like, what's the big light at the end of the tunnel for you guys?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So what I'm really excited about is the translational potential for these really immediately. So Previously, a lot of the work had been done in mouse models using mouse surrogates. And what we've designed is actually a fully human format that could, in theory, be manufactured to go into people. And so I have fantastic collaborators at Johns Hopkins University, and also having access to the patient populations that would need this most and the appropriate clinical and phase one resources that are available to me. I really envision this as something that's going to go benchside to bedside, that we've now successfully characterized this in a variety of different models, both in vitro and in vivo. And the hope is to be able to file an IND so that we could develop this into a new drug that we would use in a phase one clinical trial and beyond. So I really do see this as a strong therapy, either by itself or in combination with other either immunotherapy or targeted therapy approaches in cancer that could directly in the very near future impact patient lives.
That's so interesting. And you kind of touch on the fact that the cancer research field is just constantly changing. You know, when you started to merge those therapies and like you mentioned with your collaborators. More broadly, where do you see the field, the cancer research field, moving in the future?
Yeah, well, I think you hit the nail on the head there, just saying how interactive, interdisciplinary everything has become, right? When I say I'm a bioengineer, you know, back in the day, you were either a biologist or you were an engineer, right? You weren't both. But the lines are so blurred now. And I think that's great. I think it's wonderful that we don't have to discreetly define ourselves and limit ourselves in any way in terms of tackling these big mysteries, these big challenges, these big problems. So I really do see the cancer research field as becoming more interdisciplinary, having people on both the basic and clinical side, having people who are experts in computation. You know, there's so many emerging therapies that are based on AI, on, you know, sort of machine learning and, you know, ways that we can integrate computational information into therapeutic design. And so I really see this as sort of a beginning that's maybe started about 5-10 years ago, where things just started getting much, much more interfacial in terms of the different research disciplines that are used to generate therapies. And I see that moving forward to the point where maybe we're no longer, you know, even defined necessarily by departments or by, you know, research specialties, but, you know, by the different problems and challenges that we're addressing with our research.
Yeah, and it's just so, it's so exciting to talk to researchers like yourself, Dr. Spengler, and many others who we work with here at the V Foundation, where there's a lot of optimism. You know, when you talk to different researchers, it may be for different things. Their work is focused on different areas, but there is a general optimism that the field is really expanding in an exciting way. And it's going to lead to a lot more positive developments in the near future. My last question for you would just be that, you know, our hope and what we always talk about here at the V Foundation is to achieve victory over cancer. So what would victory over cancer look like to you?
Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, it would look wonderful. I know just, you know, my own experience, I was very fortunate that my father's disease was caught when it was, that he had surgery. And actually, literally a month later, we were going down water slides in the Atlantis Resort in the Bahamas.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
For his 60th birthday. And so, you know, we're very fortunate that everything worked out as well as it possibly could in his case. But for every case like his, there are so many more cases where that doesn't happen. Where people's lives for either a short period or a long period of time are devastated by this disease and by various forms of it. And so for me, what would be victory over cancer? I think there's different stages, sort of like in this whole situation we're in right now, people talk about the different stages. I mean, one stage, right, would be that we have a treatment, right, that we have a therapy that anybody who is diagnosed with cancer, that we have a way to rid them of the disease and achieve complete durable cures for those patients. Beyond that, I think would be a stage where we have vaccines, where we have prophylactic measures that would prevent one from even developing cancer in the first place. And along those lines, maybe even in between those stages, maybe there would be a stage where we would have better detection techniques that we can anticipate through either computational techniques or sophisticated experimental techniques, who is going to develop cancer, who's at risk, and how can we mitigate that? How can we prevent that? And so I think that ultimately victory over cancer, you know, is going to be multiple things. And I think they're going to involve, sort of, again, an interdisciplinary approach that will be very common. And I think it will also involve cooperation between people on the diagnostic and people on the therapeutic end to be able to fully identify patients who might develop disease and to be able to, in a timely and targeted manner, treat that disease.
Well, when we get there, we know we'll have people like you to thank, Dr. Spengler, for mm-hmm. all of your hard work
thank
in this
you so
field.
Much.
Absolutely. And like I mentioned before, Mick and I, everyone at the V Foundation, and I'm sure everyone listening to this podcast, we're just so grateful for all of the work that you put into trying to achieve victory over cancer. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. Dr. Spengler, thank you so much for giving us some time on the Voices for Victory podcast. But more importantly, thank you so much for all of the amazing work that you and your team are doing every single day.
Thank you so much. And thank you for this opportunity to talk a little bit more about my inspiration and my research. But also thanks for the wonderful and amazing things that your foundation tirelessly does to end cancer. And I look forward to working together with you and with others toward this common goal.
That's it for us today. Thanks so much for tuning in and for being a part of our team as we work towards victory over cancer. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to the Voices for Victory podcast wherever you listen to podcasts so you can get updates when a new episode is posted. And while you're at it, maybe you can even toss us a 5-star rating. Samantha and I would really appreciate it.
Really appreciate it. Also, for more information about the V Foundation, you can visit v.org or follow us on social media at the V Foundation.
Until next time.
To me, there are three things we all should do every day. We do this every day of our life. You're going to have, what a wonderful, number one is laugh. You should laugh every day. Number two is think. You should spend some time in thought. And number three is you should have your emotions moved to tears. Could be happiness or joy. But think about it. If you laugh, you think, and you cry, that's a full day. That's a heck of a day.